Senate will please come to order. Chief Clerk, please call the roll.
Roll call for Tuesday, February 14th. Agar excused. Anderson?
Here.
Anselmi Dalton?
Here.
Baldwin?
Here.
Barnard?
Here.
Boner?
Here.
Bouchard?
Here.
Burns?
Excused.
Case?
Present.
Christensen?
Here.
Coe?
Here.
Dockstetter?
Here.
Driscoll?
Here.
Ellis?
Here.
Emmerich?
Here.
Hastert? Hicks.
Here.
Kinski.
Here.
Landon.
Here.
Meyer.
Here.
Moniz.
Here.
Nethercott. Pappas.
Here.
Perkins.
Here.
Peterson.
Here.
Rothfuss.
Here.
Scott.
Here.
Von Platern.
Here.
Wasserberger.
Here.
President Bebout.
Here.
28 present, 2 excused.
Prayer this morning by Reverend Rick Veit. Please stand.
Thank you. And for the prayer on this, the 14th day of February, I offer you an excerpt from a letter written many years ago to a community in Greece. Let us pray. And now I will show you the most excellent way. If I speak in the tongue of men and of angels, but have not love, I am only a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal. If I have the gift of prophecy and can fathom all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have faith that can move mountains but have not love, I am nothing. If I give all I possess to the poor and surrender my body to the flames but have not love, I gain nothing. Love is patient, love is kind, does not envy, does not boast, is not proud, it is not rude, self-seeking, it is not easily angered, and it keeps no record of wrongs. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. It always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. Love never fails. Amen.
Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Reading, correction, approval of journal. Will the reading clerk please read the journal committee report?
Mr. President, your Journal Committee reports that the Journal of February 13, 2017 has been read and recommends that it be approved. Senator Bouchard, Chairman.
Are there any objections? There being none, the report is adopted. The doctor for the day is Dr. Megan Schaff, University of Wyoming Family Medicine here in Cheyenne. Nurse for the day is Kristen Colbrand. Kristen's back there. Welcome, Kristen. Good to see you from Weston County. Today in Wyoming history, in 1870, Senator Hastert, the Sweetwater County Board of Commissioners, in a vote of 2-1, approved Esther Hobart Morris's application for Justice of the Peace. This made her the first woman Justice of the Peace in the United States. 2-1. I don't know who the one that voted against it was, but we never heard about that person anymore, did we? Session status. Today is day 26 of the proposed 37-day session and is also Valentine's Day. Senator Boner, what's that on your desk? You got a little rose up there, several roses.
Mr. Chairman, got some roses and actually some Slim Jims as well from my loving wife, so she knows me well.
Senator Emmerich.
Privilege of the floor, Mr. President.
You may.
I think you will notice on your desks there are a number of mugs that have been built and filled by the legislative spouses, but I also have this. for the staff. This is to be distributed amongst you, and I will not, I don't believe there's a quota system. There's goodies in there, and you're just going to have to fight them yourself, if I may. Thank you.
Quotas, yeah, that's a great word for the political arena.
Yes.
Quotas. I think that there was a contest. Senator Hastert, do you have a report for the Senate this morning?
Mr. President, let me hear it. Let's get
you may have privilege of the floor.
May I have privilege of the floor. Let's get this, see if we can get...
Uh-oh. Remember that we're live, Senator Hastert. Be careful which button you push.
Well, it was just... Anyway, we are the champions in the background here because, Mr. President, once again, your Senate has brought home the trophy on a three-peat. And I've got to say that our fabulous lead, Ray Peterson, is our lead singer. But we had some excellent help last night, and it was pretty awesome. The ones that were present last night were Ray, Senator Michael, Drew. We had Senator Pappas, Paul Barnard, Chris Raftus, myself, Cale Case were there, Leland Christensen, and three new additions. Some of the dynamic three here, Senator Nethercott, Senator Anselmi, and Affy down there. They did a fabulous job, and really, they're the ones that really brought it home. And we did two songs last night. We did My Girl, and of course, appropriately for the ladies here. And then we finished off with Old Time Rock and Roll. And I don't know how many of you have seen the movie Risky Business with Tom Cruise. We had our own Tom Cruise there last night. And Senator Bill Landon did an excellent job, really brought down the house with his performance last night. I got to thank you, Bill Landon, for all you did. You brought one home for the team here. And thank you, Bill. Did a great job with us. So, Mr. President, this is not a traveling trophy. This is the Senate's trophy here. So, fabulous job by everybody, Ray. We can't do it without you, and fantastic. And it was great to have the ladies with us last night. It was fantastic, and it really went well. So, Mr. President, you should be proud. And I have officially thought of a name for our group here, and we are the three S's, is the whole group, the Sensational Senate Singers.
You know, that might be the best thing we can remember this session by, would be that, instead of some of the other things going on, Senator Hastert. You know, I did hear that we do have the Senate version of the three, or the Supremes, the three ladies, the Supremes. Is that true, ladies, Senator Ellis? Would you like to comment on that?
Yes, Mr. President, that might be an insult to the Supreme, so we don't want to go there.
Actually, Senator Perkins and I were trying to figure out a good group, the singing group, and the only one I could come up with was the Supremes, and he mentioned the Pointer Sisters, but we'll leave it there. Senator Hastert, though, you ought to work on the technical side of that, because I think a version of My Girl sung by Senators Peterson and Perkins would be appropriate sometime, maybe in about 2.5 weeks. We may want to hear that. Senator Anderson.
Mr. President, I think we should present that trophy to you and get a picture, and maybe it could be someplace really conspicuous that the press might see it also. That'd be wonderful.
But I wasn't there to contribute, Senator Anderson. I...
ceremonial.
Yeah. Senator Landon, or do I want to call you just Senator Cruz?
Mr. President, I would ask a favor. We senators do try to stick together, and if you do see a rogue video traveling out there across the the social media streams, I would just simply ask that you delete that quickly and get rid of it. I have a great fear that that might last out there somewhere. So thank you very much, Mr. President.
Okay. Senator Kinski, do you want to add to the comments?
Mr. President, not to diminish the achievement, but I wonder if we might get an answer to the rumor that part of the reason we won is that the House was still in session at the time of the contest.
You're not done, Senator Hastert. One more time. For your second time, Senator Hastert.
The House did show up. They were a little late. We did volunteer to sing for them initially, but they did come, and they did bring their A game. They stepped it up tremendously from what they have over the last few years, but it just wasn't quite enough. I told them, take notes of what we do. And
Well, members of the Senate, I'm going to remember this, all these smiling faces that I look out there today, and I'm going to capture that moment, and I'm going to remind you of that maybe later on as we get towards the end of the session. Messages from the House.
From the House of Representatives, February 13, 2017. Message number 305. Mr. President, the following bill passed the House on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. House Bill 1, General Government Appropriations, Ayes 46, Noes 14. Signed, Wendy Harding, House Chief Clerk.
Senator Burns, come up here, would you? House bill's on first reading. House Bill 1, first reading of the House bill.
House Bill 1, General Government Appropriations, sponsored by the Joint Appropriations Committee.
House Bill 1 will refer to Committee Number 2, Appropriations. Reports from standing committees.
February 14, 2017, Mr. President, your committee number 2, to whom was referred House Bill 23, Secretary of State's Office Amendments, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass. I, Senators Burns, Dockstader, Driscoll, Hastert, and Landon, Senator Burns, Chairman. Mr. President, your committee number 2, to whom was referred House Bill 86, Omnibus Water Bill Construction, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass. I, Senators Burns, Dockstader, Driscoll, Hastert, and Landon, Senator Burns, Chairman.
Senator Coe.
The education accountability was read in yesterday. It does have an appropriations. Request it be re-referred to committee number 2.
Without objection, House Bill 40 has been re-referred to committee number 2, appropriations. Bill's on second reading. House Bill 27, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 27, School Facility Property Insurance.
Wait a minute, we got the wrong. Redact that comment, Mr. Reading Clerk. You got handed the wrong.
Redacted.
Re-what?
Redacted. We are off to a great start today. Okay. Second reading of House bills. House Bill 19, second reading of the House bill.
House Bill 19, sales from remote sellers.
House Bill 19, having read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hear no objections. It is so ordered. House Bill 21, second reading of the House bill.
House Bill 21, Secretary of State Certificates of Authentication.
House Bill 21, having read two separate times, the question is, shall the House bill be read a third time? Hear no objections. It is so ordered. House Bill 22, second reading of the House bill.
House Bill 22, Business Entities Communications Contact.
There is an amendment. Would you please read that amendment in?
House Bill 22, second reading amendment number 1, page 2, line 1.
Senator Meyer?
Yeah, Mr. President, may I privilege the floor?
You may.
Thank you, Mr. President. Fellow senators, we're joined today by the fourth grade class from Trail Elementary up in Torrington, and they're with their teachers, Mrs. Brummel and Mrs. Fulmer. Would you please help me welcome them to the Senate?
Hooray!
They're on both ends.
Welcome to the Senate. Senator Burchard.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd like to move Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1.
No, second reading amendment.
Second reading amendment 1 to House Bill 22. And what we're doing with this amendment is there are some problems with this bill. And if we look at the form, and I didn't hand it out, but if you look at the form and how we actually go through the process of incorporating or doing an LLC, there is already a procedure in place that we're going to kind of circumvent, because there are needs to have attorneys or accountants or other people that actually are the registered agent, and so we're bypassing that in a way, and there are some privacy concerns, and one of the examples I've used is if I wanted to have an ammunition warehouse that had $5 million of ammo, but I didn't want people to know where it was, we could have a need to organize that in a fashion where we're keeping that kind of hidden, and we're doing business legitimately in Wyoming. I think what this bill tries to do, or what the attempt was, I should say, is to target out-of-state people that are actually filing in Wyoming. And I think this bill actually throws our people under the bus. And I think the people that live here don't deserve that. For what this bill is doing. So on this amendment, if we go through it on page 1, we don't touch anything there. We're actually adding more of the mailing and physical address. So I think that's a benefit to the Secretary of State. But on page 2, we're replacing the stricken language, and then we're adding partner, manager member, or other. And then it says designated agent of the entity. So we're putting that back, but we're putting the language manager or member or other partner, manager or member. And then we're also doing that on page, and that's on line 1 and 2. And then we're striking what's on 5, starting at designated communications contact for the entity, and then down to line 17. And then on the next page, we're just duplicating the insertion to make it all fit with the amendment that we did on page 2. We're just doing a duplicate insertion there. And so I'd ask for your favorable consideration on this amendment, because, like I said, I don't think we need to throw the people that are doing legitimate business here under the bus. And I'll leave it at that.
Further discussion? Ready for the question? Senator Case.
Mr. President, I think this is a pretty big change. It's this, as I read this amendment, and I hope I'm reading it correctly, that this would still allow the contact to be the registered or a designated agent. And I think that's the part that's problematic, in that the purpose of this bill, Mr. President, was to attempt to have a real person as a communications contact. And, Mr. President, as it came from our friends down the hall, that contact included director, officer, a member or manager of an LLC, managing partner, trustee, or employee. And we ran into a little thinking in our Senate committee that employee could be a contractual relationship. So that actually was why the registered agent could also be the employee, and or it could be an employee of the registered agent. So you weren't having real contact with a real person in a company. I don't think this is unfriendly to, the bill's not unfriendly to Wyoming companies. We all know who our friends and neighbors are. I think that the amendment seeks to restore total anonymity to using Wyoming corporations' laws to build LLCs. You may think that's a good thing. I can see any situation where an LLC, for example, that warehoused ammunition. It doesn't mean that the ammunition has to be warehoused where the location is, where the sign is. It says where the business office is, so we can actually have a place where we can talk to a real person, and there has been abuses, Mr. President. Although Wyoming got kind of a bad rap, we certainly have all those thousands of Panama Papers companies that were identified. Only a couple were truly in Wyoming, and one was one really bad actor, and that has been shut down. I ask you to oppose the amendment.
Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Mr. President. On against the amendment. You know, we're not throwing anybody under the bus here. We're not harming anyone in our state. Simply, all we're doing is we want to put a body, a true person, as the communication contact for the entity, and not be an employee of the registered agent. So that's all this is simply doing is just allowing for that designation of a true a person, a director, an officer, or a managing partner, or a trustee, to be the contact, communication contact. That's all this bill is doing, and it's just giving the Secretary of State's office just that extra tool to be able to contact a true living person. Thank you, Mr. President.
Further discussion? Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. President. On and in favor of the amendment, I think that's what we heard just is that's the problem with both the, with if you don't have this amendment, that's the problem that we're at with what's going on here. You have this list of individuals that the amendment would delete, and those individuals, with the exception of Romanet 6 that are being deleted, all those individuals, for the most part, appear in the document, the registration document, with the on the articles of incorporation. If you're a corporation, you have to list who the incorporator is. You usually have to list who an officer. When you do your annual reports, you're supposed to provide that information, who the officers are. In your when you file a living liability company, if you're member managed, you have to disclose who your manager is, or at least one of your managers. If you are a member managed living liability company, you have to list the members. So that information is there. The question is, how do you keep it updated? And when you file your annual reports, you're supposed to update that. So that information is supposedly and already required to be available. Now you can put this in, and you can have these requirements in there. But at the end of the day, you're supposed to provide that information to your registered agent. If you don't provide it, or if your information is provided as false to your registered agent, the registered agent has no authority or power to do anything to correct it other than say, well, fine, I won't be a registered agent anymore, if the registered agent can know that it's false. And then the other thing you've got here is when you talk about the employee, the problem isn't whether it's an employee. The problem is you're looking for a valid employee. You're looking for a real employee, and there's nothing that happens, and the amendment strikes that phrase out of the bill. There's nothing that happens that defines what a real employee is. If it was a real live employee, a real live person, a real live contact person, it wouldn't matter. But the amendment seeks to strike that because in the end it doesn't do anything.
Further discussion. Senator Pappas, for your second time.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for my second time. I really think it, this bill, as amended with the Standing Committee Amendment, does have valid reasons for existing. The problem is that in the past, this designated communications contact was an employee of the registered agent, not tied to the company. And that's, and if we don't put this language in, that will continue on. And so we'll have, testified that there were companies out there that had thousands, that had one employee of the registered agent was the communications contact for thousands of companies. But that's what we're trying to get rid of, that abuse. All we're looking for is a designated communications contact, and now that has to be one of the officers. That's all. Simple. Thank you, Mr. President.
Further discussion. Senator Case, for your second time.
Absolutely, Mr. President. Thank you. And this is that all this says is every entity shall provide to its registered agent a real person who's really works for the company or is part of the company to be the communications contact. It closes the loophole that a registered agent could have a communications contact, and that the registered agent could work with the company to have another communications contact that's not even part of the company. That could be the contact for hundreds of companies as an attempt to get around knowing who these companies are. I hope you'll support the bill and defeat the amendment.
Anyone else wish to speak before the sponsor speaks for a second time? Anyone else? Senator Meyer.
Thank you. I guess some clarification as I read this amendment, and I think as how it was explained to me, was that in your filing of an LLC, you have to disclose who the officers are. And then when you disclose who the officers are, I guess the question would be, is there any prohibition from the registered agent or disclosing who those officers are to the Secretary of State? Because I'm assuming that the officer would be a real person, in which case the Secretary of State would have a real person to contact, even though the registered agent was listed as the main contact. If there were any questions, I would assume that the Secretary of State's office could call the officer. And so I don't know whether that assumption is right, Mr. President, but if somebody has to answer that question, I'd appreciate knowing.
Further discussion, Senator Scott.
Mr. President, I'm having some trouble with this amendment. I've been trying to figure out if the amendment passes, is there anything left in the bill? And I'm not sure that there is. My concern is that the abuse we're seeing, that the purpose of a registered agent is somebody that you can serve that then can contact the corporation. That's a registered agent's job. And we have found with some of them that the registered agents are defeating that purpose by listing one of their own employees as the contact for the company. And there's some question as to whether they really know how to get hold of the company at all. And I think, as I read the amendment, it's taking out the provision that their contact can't be an employee of the registered agent. And I think that's the basic purpose of the bill, and I'm afraid we're losing it with this amendment.
Senator Perkins, for your second time.
My second time, just to answer a couple of the questions that are out there. I mean, so if you take away, yeah, that's correct. The amendment would take out or strike out the requirement that you or would make it so you could not be an employee of the registered agent and be the contact person or employee of a foreign entity. You passed the bill with the amendment, or quite frankly, Mr. President, without the amendment. Guess what's going to happen? The corporation is going to name the registered agent or an employee of the registered agent as an officer, or a member or a manager or a trustee, because you can have as many of those as you want. They could be a director. So at the end of the day, I mean, whether you vote for this amendment or not, it's not going to change the playing game. I mean, somehow you have to get to this contact person and define this contact person in a meaningful way if it's going to happen. And even if you define it in a meaningful way, that responsibility to hold that contact information is the commercial, or if they've got 10 or more, but is the commercial registered agent. Again, the problem that will still happen, even if you do that, is the registered agent has no authority to monitor that beyond sending a letter or making a telephone call or sending a fax or an email. And there's no way and no power for the registered agent to verify that information in any event.
Anybody else before the sponsor speaks for a second time? Senator Burchard, for your second time.
Thank you, Mr. President. When I discussed this with our drafters of the bill, and I'm not talking about I'm talking about LSO, is that they never saw the form of how we actually do the business of filing for an LLC or an incorporation. And so that it was kind of news to them to see that on the form it has the place for the officers, the incorporators, or whatever their title is, their addresses. It has, so that information is being captured when they incorporate. So I don't, back to what the senator from, the good senator from Natrona said, this bill in its form does nothing. What we're trying to do is actually not do more than we need to do and make people jump through hoops that are trying to incorporate in the state. And quite frankly, we are doing something on page one where we're actually putting another physical address provision there on page one, and we're leaving that. So that does something that maybe the Secretary of State wants. But as far as the form has everything you need, it has the, you know, you've got to put three incorporators on the form. You've got the mailing address of the corporation. I mean, all the information we're trying to capture is we're already doing it. I can't understand why that we would want to further regulate and make an attorney not be able to be a registered agent under this new language. And, you know, I think I'll just leave it at that. And, I mean, we're going farther than we need to go. I think if we want to do the things that maybe we're talking about with fraud, we need another bill that treats people that come in from out of state differently than the people that incorporate within Wyoming. Thank you, Mr. President.
Okay, we're voting on second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 22. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
That amendment passes.
Division.
Division. All in favor, please stand. Those opposed? Second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 22 has failed. House Bill 22 having read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the House bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. House Bill 36, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 36, obsolete laws.
House Bill 36, having read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. House Bill 37, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 37, teacher accountability.
House Bill 37, having read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the House bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. House Bill 38, second reading of the House bill.
House Bill 38, school finance, interfund borrowing.
There is an amendment. Will the reading clerk please read that amendment in?
House Bill 38, second reading amendment number 1, page 1, line 4.
Senator Ellis.
Thank you, Mr. President. Great discussion yesterday on this little House bill. As you'll recall, we had a big discussion about interest that accrues between the period of December 15th and June 15th when some of these interfund borrowing loans are due. To help alleviate that concern, we thought we would just make all due or loans due by December 15th. So that's what the second amendment reading, or the second amendment, this amendment on second reading does to House Bill 38.
Second reading amendment number 1. That's what it does. Okay, yes. Senator Cole.
Support of the amendment, but also to draw your attention to a handout I sent out that you might find interesting. It's called, it says Historical School Foundation Program Account Borrowing Amounts. They're out there, so I send that out for your attention and ask that you support the amendment.
Further discussion? Question being called for. We're voting on second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 38. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That amendment, second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 38 has passed. House Bill 38, having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. House Bill 82, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 82, local optional sales and use taxes.
House Bill 82, having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Senator Kinski, do you have a...
Well, I have an exhibit out to answer some questions. I'll save it for third reading, Mr. Chairman.
House Bill 118, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 118, purchase of water rights and facilities.
Mr. President. Senator Kinski. It's on.
Answer a few questions that came up tomorrow regarding House Bill 118. As you know, this is acquisition of water supply from a company that owns some interest in Lake DeSmit. The crown jewel of that water is water right is dates to 1939, which precedes the 1950 Yellowstone Compact. So it's a very valuable water right that the state would be acquiring. There is no appropriation asked for at this time. It's simply a bill to enable the WWDC to enter into negotiations for an amount not to exceed. There are some questions about a Level 2 study, and in fact, a Level 2 study will be conducted simultaneous with the negotiations to answer the many good and valid questions that were raised yesterday. Initially, the WWDC thought that they had looked at this project enough that they could dispense with a study, but by the time they got to the Select Water Committee, they were directed to undertake a Level 2 study simultaneously. One of the questions that came up, I think it was from my friend from Bates Creek, is if we acquired this water, is the state going to be hooked into a whole bunch of liability? That will be further clarified by the Level 2 study. Hopefully, we'll all be looking at this when we come back here next year with much more information. But they have quantified the annual expense as being between $75,000 and $100,000. And the intent of the WWDC is to seek an appropriation out of the water fund to create a reserve fund to cover that liability. There was a question about the economics of the customer base for this. And concerns that the water is in Lake DeSmit, how useful is it? With this bill and this acquisition, the hope is that a water project such as the Bull Creek project can move this water right back up onto the mountain, getting it 1,200 feet higher, meaning that it will be available to two or three different irrigation districts where there are a number of junior appropriators in danger of being called out in dry years. And there's also the prospect that it might be moved over to the Tongue River Basin to deal with the adjudication in the Wyoming versus Montana litigation, which places a number of appropriators in that basin in danger of being called out in dry years. So I just wanted to assure folks there is not an appropriation sought at this time. There will be a Level 2 study. And before we come back to you next year, all of those questions will have been answered by the study, assuming that we can even negotiate a price that's acceptable. Thank you, Mr. President.
House Bill 118, have me read two separate times. The question is, shall the House bill be read a third time? Here, no objections. It is so ordered. House Bill 192, second reading of the House bill.
House Bill 192, Court Automation Fee 2.
House Bill 192, have me read two separate times. The question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Here, no objections. It is so ordered. House Bill 291, second reading of the House bill.
House Bill 291, Department of Health Facilities.
We have an amendment. Reading clerk, please read that in.
House Bill 291, second reading amendment number 1, page 2, line 22.
Senator Burchard.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd like to move second reading amendment 1 to House Bill 291. And what this amendment does is on page 2, on line 22 and 23, we're actually striking this section. It says, no contract authorized by this subsection shall be subject to the Professional Architectural Engineering and Land Surveying Services Procurement Act. And it cites the numbers there. There's nothing wrong with citing the numbers as long as we worded it different. But this could be misconstrued to say we're going to bypass procurement rules. And there is absolutely nothing that are in our rules now that would actually not let us use 9-2-10-27 through 10-33. So it does nothing to the bill. It's actually, I consider it a friendly amendment to the bill, and actually just make sure that nothing's misconstrued that we're trying to bypass competitive bidding. So I would ask for your favorable vote on this amendment. Thank
you. Senator Dockstader.
Thank you, Mr. President. A friendly amendment. The people working on this throughout those 35-meeting process have continually tried to be very transparent in the bidding process and everything involved, a friendly amendment.
Further discussion. We're voting on second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 291. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 291 has passed. House Bill 291, having read two separate times, the question is, shall the House bill be read a third time? There are no objections. It is so ordered. House Joint Resolution number 8. Second reading of the Joint Resolution.
House Joint Resolution 8, Federal Responsibility for American Indian Health Care.
House Joint Resolution number 8, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the House Joint Resolution be read a third time? Hearing no objections. It is so ordered. Bill's on third reading. House Bill 113, third reading of the House bill.
House Bill 113, Medicare Waiver Program Military Personnel, sponsored by the Labor Committee, an act relating to the Medical Assistance and Services Act.
House Bill 113, having read three separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? Will the Chief Clerk please call the roll?
Agar excused. Anderson?
Aye.
Aye. Anselmi Dalton?
Aye.
Aye. Baldwin?
Aye.
Aye. Barnard?
Aye.
Aye. Boner?
Aye.
Aye. Bouchard?
Aye.
Aye. Burns?
Aye.
Aye. Case?
Aye.
Aye. Christensen?
Aye.
Aye. Coe?
Aye.
Dockstader?
Aye.
Driscoll?
Aye.
Aye. Ellis?
Aye.
Aye. Emmerich?
Aye.
Aye. Hastert?
Aye.
Aye. Hicks?
Aye.
Aye. Kinski?
Aye.
Aye. Landon?
Aye.
Aye. Meyer?
Aye.
Moniz?
Aye.
Aye. Nethercott?
Aye.
Pappas?
Aye.
Aye. Perkins?
Aye.
Aye. Peterson?
Aye.
Aye. Rothfuss?
Aye.
Aye. Scott?
Aye.
Aye. Von Platern?
Aye.
Aye. Wasserberger? Aye. President Bebout?
Aye.
Aye. Closing vote. Closing vote closed. 29 aye, 1 excused.
House Bill 113, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, House Bill 113 has passed the Senate. Senator Barnard, you got something going on? Do you want to have privilege of the floor? Are you going to let us in on the secret?
Could I come up to right here?
You may have privilege of the floor at whatever position you want to take it, as long as it's in the chamber.
Mr. President, I would ask the chief clerk if she could have her staff come in.
Chief clerk, would you call your staff, please? The Senate will stand at ease until we get back, the chief clerk gets back. What happened to Senator Bernard? Oh, wait a minute. AWOL. Oh, here he comes. Oh. Senator Barnard, do you need some assistance with all these goodies, or are you going to be able to handle it?
I think so, Mr. President. Members of the Senate, we have a wonderful staff. Today's Valentine's Day, and we really appreciate them. We want to let them know we love them, and we're appreciative of all the things they do for us. They spoil us rotten, and we wouldn't have it any other way. So we just thought today we'd like to give them a little small token of our appreciation.
Oh, this is... Did you buy too many, or have you got somebody we don't know about, Senator Bernard?
There's Kathy. Ron, I don't know where Ron.
Kathy, be sure and get a picture of this, would you please? Well, wait a minute. I've got to get in this picture. Get it up here. There we go. Here, I'll stand up. Look at this picture.
Georgia, turn around.
Senator Barnard, look at all the
well done.
Happy Valentine's Day, ladies.
So staff, thank you so much for all you do. We really love you.
I don't think it's quite over yet, is it?
Nope, yet not.
We have more coming. Uh-oh. For the... Senator Barnard, do you wish to say something else?
Yes, I've always got something else to say, President. I'd like to have Senator Lisa Anselmi Dalton, Senator Abby Ellis, and the beautiful Tara Nethercott come forward. Mr. President, Last year when we left, we had a queen, and we lost her. And we've been befuddled, and we've been dejected, and just wondered what would happen. And then, lo and behold, when the Senate started, we had three beautiful princesses come to us. So we would like to present them with a token of our esteem for the beauty and the brains and the charm that they bring to the Senate. And I just have to say, you got to be careful because they will kill your bill. We're not over.
Thank you. Maybe you are and just don't know it. But oh.
Senators, are you ready for the question? All those in favor of support Senator Barnard's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rise to report, to do so with a favorable recommendation that Princess Affy, Princess Lisa, and Princess Tara be our official Senate Princess Valentines. All in favor, say aye.
Aye. Whoa, what's...
Mr. President, since we've got some princesses, I was wondering if we... Maybe he could have a king.
Senator Barnard, thank you for all of this. I appreciate that. Part of this really made sense. I'm not sure about the last part, but thank you. Levity is a great thing, and humor is something we really appreciate, so thanks for doing this, and we do have an incredible staff, and they've been there with us for how many days now, 20, 26 or whatever. We've got a ways to go, so thank you for consideration in doing this. I really mean that. Let's give him a hand, ladies and gentlemen. What did this cost you? No, you don't have to answer that. Let's see. I've lost my train of thought, Mr. Majority Flirter. I believe we're on that order of business bills for consideration on general file. Do you have a motion?
I move that the Senate resolve itself in the Committee of the Whole for consideration of House bills on general file.
Senator Emmerich, you want to be king of general file?
I would prefer not.
What a great thing to do. Almost the only one to get away with that.
Well, you mission accomplished. You confused me, Senator Byrne. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carries. Senator Emmerich.
Committee of the Whole, will please come to order. First bill for our consideration is House Bill 27. Reading clerk, will please read the bill.
House Bill 27, School Facility Property Insurance, an act relating to school facilities, sponsored by the School Facilities Committee, was referred to committee number 2, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. I, Senators Burns, Dockstader, Driscoll, Hastert, and Landon. Senator Burns, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 27, School Facility Property Insurance. There are no standing committee amendments, and for further explanation of the bill, I ask that you call on Duke Bill Landon.
Senator Landon.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I bring to you fellow senators House Bill 27, which came out of the interim this past year from your Select Committee on School Facilities. This is a pretty simple and straightforward bill that goes into WS 21-3-129, creates a new paragraph D, which simply requires local boards of trustees out there in our school districts to procure a policy or policies for property insurance that is adequate to cover against loss or damage to the facilities. Fellow senators, this came about because of several conversations over the interim. We have come to realize that we have, quite a liability in terms of facilities out across this state. We had a couple of incidents take place, Mr. Chairman. Over on the Sweetwater, we had a school that suffered some major flooding damage. Over in the southeast corner of the state, we had a major hailstorm, which created havoc on the school buildings over in that small community. And what happens is these school districts then contact the state of Wyoming through the construction department and need some help in terms of emergency funding and whatever. We're kind of at the mercy as to what sorts of insurances exist out there in order to have any repayment back to the state when we technically just loan that money to the school districts to take care of these things. The more we visited about that on the Select Committee, the more we were absolutely convinced that we needed at least this provision in the statutes. We think that it probably deserves more study going forward, Mr. Chairman, but this is a quick fix to simply indicate that we want those districts to have some adequate insurance on those buildings out across there. We talked about, we considered replacement value on this insurance coverage, but we settled for just simply adequate to cover loss or damage. I've got quite a bit more information here, Mr. Chairman, with regard to what types of insurance exist out across there. When we asked the school districts, we did not hear back from all of them, but out of 29 of them, they belong to an insurance pool, and then, of course, it's scattered among private insurers, the other half. So we think this is kind of an important little bill to get us started on the road to making sure that we've got some adequate liability coverage out across there.
I will submit to you that I received information after this bill was already filed, and you've heard the tall senator from Natrona County and me both talk about the fact that we think we've got to take some time and do a review of how we're insuring through the school districts out across there. I did check with some attorneys who have assured me that we're in pretty good shape on the coverages that we do have, including that self-insurance pool. And so I have a pretty good comfort level, but I do think it's something we want to keep an eye on going forward. But that's the bill, Mr. Chairman. Pretty straightforward. I'd be glad to try to answer any questions.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I do have a number of questions on this. The first one is, did the committee consider whether it would be better to be self-insured? And I'm also wondering, with regard to state buildings, and the state has, you know, quite a number of office buildings and whatnot, am I right in thinking that we're basically self-insured on those and do not purchase private insurance? And my feeling is has that issue been looked at handling school districts the same way, or am I wrong about how the state handles that? What would be the implications of going that route?
Senator Burns. Senator Landon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll take that one. I was just waiting to see if there were any other questions. We have not had an in-depth discussion about self-insuring. I do believe that the senator from Natrona County is correct. The state buildings, I believe, are under are self-insured. That's what I alluded to, Mr. Chairman, a little bit earlier. I think this is something that that probably could use some interim study as we kind of continue to get our arms around issues like maintenance and how we're best to take care of all those facilities out across there. I do think that if any of these insurance plans were to get in trouble, that we would be in major trouble anyway. If we had a big catastrophe, whether we were self-insured or whether we have the districts continue the plan they're on. So I think it's worth much more consideration as we go forward. But no, we have not had a deep, in-depth conversation about should we go the way of our state buildings, or just kind of continue down the same road, but just have some requirements put in place. So I hope that kind of answers the question, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, just to give a little more thorough answer, one of the reasons that self-insurance was not discussed is that there is an insurance pool for school districts for their facilities. I believe it's run by the School Boards Association, and please correct me if I'm wrong on that. And so, with that in place, and their rates are quite good, we didn't get into a lengthy discussion on self-insurance by individual school districts.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I do think that's an issue we're going to need to look at. We've got the school districts, we've got the state, we've got the university and the community colleges, and they're all little different circumstances. And, you know, the argument for self-insurance is that we just take what would otherwise be premiums, put it in a fund, and protect ourselves that way. It's how it's often done if you're big enough. And I don't think we've got any consistency. I think we need to look at the pros and cons in that, Mr. Chairman. That's something well beyond the scope of this particular bill. Mr. Chairman, I do have another concern, two concerns. And that is, this bill requires property insurance. Mr. Chairman, I don't think what the school board's joint powers, and it's a joint powers board that provides coverage for the school, for a number of the schools, I don't think that meets the technical qualifications of insurance. I think we're going to have to amend this bill if you want them using that coverage. Because I don't think technically what they're doing meets insurance. It isn't insurance under our insurance code. So I have a reservation there on that one. And, Mr. Chairman, I have had some discussions with the Joint Powers Board, and we brought an amendment that passed on the budget bill on the subject. And I think maybe we need to repeat that and ensure that we have a look at this, because if we require coverage and there are inadequate reserves and reinsurance with this pool, and we're using that, then we have the illusion of insurance without actually having it. And what I think we need to do, and I've talked to the Joint Powers Board in connection with the earlier effort, and they said they would welcome an examination. I think we need to use our insurance department, examine this Joint Powers Board, make sure that it really is coverage if we're going to require it. Because I think if we're going to require insurance, we ought to get real insurance and have something that we can rely on. So, Mr. Chairman, welcome any thoughts on that, but I'm seriously thinking of a second reading amendment to, one, make sure that you can access this pool to meet the requirements of this bill, and second, to make sure that what's being provided through the Joint Powers Board, in fact, is insurance we can rely on.
Senator Landon.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I appreciate the Chairman of Labor and Health, and he certainly has much more background on these insurance matters than I. I have to say this is the first time that a couple of those things have come up, and so I'd be more than happy to work with the Chairman on some language that he thinks might help this bill. Truthfully, we have not ever gotten in much of a problem, but we could see one potentially coming down the road if we did not ask and make sure that our districts out there were insured. I think this is a good first step. We can certainly, on second reading, look at any amendments that might help the bill. And then, of course, I agree with the Senator. I think it's worth some good conversation going forward. So I'd be glad to work with the Chairman. Thank you.
Any questions, comments? All those in favor of Senator Burns' motion that when the Committee of the Whole rise to report it, do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 27, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? House Bill 27 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 32. Will the reading clerk please read it?
House Bill 32, engrossed, Ski Safety Act, an act related to skiing, sponsored by the Travel Committee, was referred to Committee Number 9, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Anderson, Coe, Perkins, Rothfuss, and Von Flatern. Senator Von Flatern, Chair.
Senator Von Flatern.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that to do so with a favorable vote on House Bill 32, there is Ski Safety Act, and there is a standing committee amendment. I'd ask that it be read in at this time.
House Bill 32, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to engrossed copy, page 2, line 15.
I move Standing Committee Number 1 to House Bill 32 and ask that you call on Senator Anderson to explain.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was going to start with the bill, not the amendment, if that's all right. And then I'll move the amendment also.
Proceed.
I bring you an interim committee bill that the TRW worked on all summer. The ski areas came to us on June 16th in Lander, and six people testified. Chairman Cooper found that there was no agreement on the thing, so he asked that they come back on August 4th to discuss this bill again, the two parties that were involved in it. So on August 4th in Kemmer, we heard them. Eight people testified about the bill. Again, there was no agreement. So on October 6th in Sundance, 13 people testified. We had agreement on the bill. And the bill did go through the House with no changes, and it had been vetted quite nicely by the committee. What the ski areas asked for was that they have inherent risk defined in the laws. What has happened to them is if they go to have a trial, the judge does not know what inherent risk is, so he has to go to a jury trial instead of having the judge decide the case. So all they're asking for is inherent risk be defined in a statute. So that's what we tried to do over the interim and got it done pretty nicely by October. We used three different ski area safety amendments or bills. One from Colorado is the gold standard for the Rocky Mountains, which, of course, is the gold standard for the U.S. We looked at Idaho and Alaska's also. In Wyoming, there are 10 ski areas. They have about 900,000 visits a year. In Colorado, there's 12 million visits a year. So we did pattern ours after Colorado's. So this is an inherent risk law, not anything else. We're just trying to define inherent risk. It doesn't happen that often, but we want to clean up our laws to make sure the judge can prosecute the suit. This does not preclude anyone from filing a suit. They can still file a suit, and the judge could rule on it. That doesn't preclude them from going to a jury trial, too, if the judge says so. So let me just step through the bill real quick. Page 2 is those definitions that I was talking about. Inherent risk, and then you see all those inherent risks of skiing. They're listed there through paragraph G, I believe it is. Then it defines on page 4, defines ski area operator, vehicles, lifts, trails, et cetera, et cetera. Then on page 5, line 17 starts with the duties of the ski area operators, which are defined in their insurance policies and defined in the National Ski Association also, but they're in this bill because everybody wanted them in the bill. So it says what the ski operator has to do, too, is mark and identify trail maps, do all the things that you'd expect a ski area to do. So then the assumptions of risk, limitations on actions, it defines what the skier has to do. And also, on page 9, it has negligence in here. If there's negligence, that's an entirely different matter, and there still is civil actions on negligence. So that gets into the comparative fault law on page 10. There's a statute of limitation, more definitions of sport or recreation opportunity, and assumption of risk. So that's the bill. The amendment that has been moved, I think, Mr. Chairman, is amendment number 1 to the engrossed copy. The first part of that, the first line 1 through 5, is counter to the bill and destroys the bill entirely for the ski areas. Section, I would like to subdivide this bill or this amendment, and division one. Oh,
point of orders.
Oh,
motion.
All right,
Senator Von Flater, would you please repeat your point of order? I'm slow on your microphone.
He needs to explain. Would Senator please explain the amendment and then make his motion to divide?
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to explain House Bill 32, Standing Committee Amendment 1. On page 2, line 15, you'll see after area, we insert, shall not include action or inaction by a ski area operator that unreasonably increases the inherent risk of skiing, except as provided in this paragraph. The page 3, line 12, after components, it's sticking in another section K and then section M, which are page 8 after line 12. And the K and M define more about the ski area operator marking hydrants, water pipes, all the structures, doing all those kind of things. So it delineates exactly what they need to mark and what they should do. M discuss maintenance equipment and how to use that, and should place or cause to be place a conspicuous notice to that effect. So if a maintenance machine is working on the slopes, they've got to put up a sign that says that, so the skier knows he has an obstruction in the ski area. So with that explanation, I'd like to divide the amendment, please. I'd move to divide. Just ask? Oh, okay. I'd like to ask then. Division 1, Mr. Chairman, is line 1 through 5. And Division 2 would be 6 through 40 or 39.
Okay, Senator Anderson, let me make sure I've got that. Division 1 is line 1 through 5. Division 2 is the remainder of the amendment. Is that correct?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Proceed.
I'd like to start on Division 2. Division 2 is a good amendment, and it helps the definition of what a ski operator ought to do and should do, and the part about the maintenance equipment is a good addition to the bill and is friendly to the bill. So I'd like to start with Division 2. I'd move Division 2. Call for the question. All right. I'll do that.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I hope I'm understanding this right, that Division 2 includes items K and M. Mr. Chairman, the question I have, they've got to adequately, appropriately cover the structure with shock-absorbent material, et cetera, and then they have to place markers and whatnot. This is Wyoming, and we get a lot of wind. What happens when this material gets blown and damaged and for a period of time till they get it fixed isn't adequate? What's this requirement doing then?
Senator Meyer.
Yeah, the question I have is, let's say a ski area operator says that the skiing on the lift line is out of bounds. Those are man-made structures, but the rules are you're not supposed to be there. Are those structures required to have that, or would that be a case when the negligence was on the skier and not the operator? I'm just wondering whether everything there, even if it's out of bounds, has to have this absorbent material. And I'm wondering whether all ski operators are doing this now or whether this is going to be an added cost to their operation.
Are you ready for the question? Senator Von Fladern.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To the answer on the good senator from Casper, once again, from Natrona County, actually, if the material blows away and the skier claims that the material was never there, I guess that goes to a judge to decide the final, whether they had adequately protected that parent post sign or whatever. The term adequate is squishy in itself because somebody's adequate is not my adequate maybe or something of that. So that's left up to the judge. According to, and the good senator from Torrington there, the Goshen County area, I would say that the ski area in the bill itself talks about, or in this, it talks about padding in the amendment. So the amendment on section 2 of the amendment talks about adequate padding. So you would assume that all those posts would have to be padded accordingly. And if it is out of bounds, they do not have to pad it according to this, according to that whole bill, but this in particular. If it's out of bounds, it's out of bounds.
Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And for clarification on where that is for the senator from the eastern part of the state behind me, page 8, paragraph K, discusses that it's the skier's responsibility to observe all posted information and signs and basically stay within the limits.
Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to address those two questions also. They're good questions. With the shock-absorbent material, they are built for wind, and the ski areas establish them and put them on that way. I ski many of these ski areas, and they do a great job with covering those posts and structures with absorbent material. So that has not been a problem for them, but if it was, the ski patrol would see that and immediately fix that because that's a big deal in their Ski Safety Act.
Any other comments? Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to kind of give you an idea or clarify for the members kind of how this works and why with on Division 2, why this how this works. If you go to in the bill, you go to page 2, line 10, what you're doing here is this is in a section of the bill describing what inherent risk is. And so inherent risk with regard to skiing in a ski area means the dangers or conditions which are part of the sport of skiing, including, and then what you've got two sections in here that are affected. And so the if you look at on the amendment, line 7 and 8 on the amendment, that goes into, if you go into page 3, line 12, what you're doing is you're adding that at the end. So what the effect of subsection or paragraph capital E on page 3, which begins on line 10, is these items under the bill, is that without the amendment, simply say that impact with ski lift towers, signs, posts, fences, or enclosures, hydrants, water pipes, or other man-made structures and their components are an inherent risk of skiing. The amendment would say, subject to this subsection K, which you see subsection K below, where you have this requirement. So what you have with the amendment with Division 2, it says that it's an inherent risk as long as it's marked. And the idea behind that is simply that the ski area knows where those items are. They know where there may be hydrants, there may be water pipes, or things that may be covered by snow, may be partially covered by snow, that may have been covered by snow but then become uncovered because of melting or wind. And so it just continues to put upon that duty as opposed to without the paragraph. Basically, it's immunity for any skier who's on the slope and hits any ski lift tower, sign, post, fence, enclosure, hydrant, water pipe, or other man-made structure. And so there's some pretty awful stories about there. Folks who have come down skiing and there's a box that's now been uncovered slightly by the snow. The person falls on it, kills them. He didn't know it was there. And so the point of this is to simply put some, is you have an inherent risk of skiing as long as you mark these man-made structures because you have those and they're subject to visibility. My experience is, as a skier, is that's generally done. You go out, you see bamboo poles that are marked out there, you see padding on
things. In fact, even things that aren't man-made. A lot of times there's an ice here. There's rocks exposed that weren't exposed maybe the week before. They're out putting a couple of bamboo, red bamboo or orange bamboo stakes out there and put them as an X so you know where that stuff is. So they're doing most of these. I think they're doing most of these things anyway. But that's the effect there. The other thing the amendment does is on the amendment lines 10 and 11 does the same thing with respect to in the bill, page 3, line 20, where they're defined as an inherent risk of skiing collisions with other skiers or ski area vehicles. Then you add the new language out of from pages line 9 and 10 on the amendment. After vehicles, you insert subject to M, and then you see M below on the amendment. It's the same type of thing. Basically, all you're doing is saying that if you've got these vehicles out there that are maintaining the slope, they shall place a conspicuous notice to effect at the top or near the trail that this being that there's maintenance equipment is down there, and so that, and also requiring some marking. But that's the effect of the amendment with respect to section 2. A little bit additional explanation, Mr. Chairman.
We're on division 2 of the amendment. All those in favor of Division 2, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Division 2 of Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 32 has passed. We are on Division 1.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chairman, in interim committee TRW, we heard a lot from 10 different ski areas in Wyoming. 7 of those ski areas are run by mom and pop. They're very small. They do their own work. They're there full time, and their margins are very small. In the event they had a major suit like this that went to jury trial, it'd probably bankrupt them and put them out of business. So they have asked that they have this inherent risk, so that if they have something, the judge can have the definition of inherent risk, so he can deal with it. That has not happened to any of our smaller ski areas, but they're awfully worried about it happening. So the first division would reverse this bill so that they do not have that protection. And that's why we're saying we'd like to defeat Division 1. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other comments?
I hope so.
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, could I have some clarification from some of the law school grads here? I'm kind of swimming around in this a little bit. Inherent risk is a legal term, and so am I correct in understanding that if you're dealing with something with inherent risk, you know that there's a particular risk to the activity, and you assume that risk yourself, and you're responsible for assuming that risk? Is that correct? And so this first amendment here, this first portion of the amendment, I'm trying to... It's almost like I'm dealing with a double negative here or a triple negative. I'm trying to figure out and read this in, and I'm just a little confused here. If somebody could give me a clearer explanation of it, I'd appreciate it.
Senator Kinski.
Mr. Chairman, my colleague from Sheridan County is correct. When there are risks inherent to an activity, like strapping boards to your feet and going down a hill at 20, 30, 40 miles an hour on top of snow and ice, it's deemed that you should have understood the risks and assumed those risks and cannot hold somebody else liable for them. And that is the intent of the bill. The intent of the amendment in Division 1 is to gut the bill by embracing a circular logic that essentially obviates what we're trying to do. So if this amendment were adopted, let's walk through what page 2, lines 14 through 16 would come to read. Inherent risk with regard to skiing in a ski area shall not include action or inaction by a ski area operator that unreasonably increases the inherent risk of skiing. Except, as provided in this paragraph, inherent risk means those dangers or conditions which are part of the sport of skiing, including. So then they go through the list of conditions. The problem is, when you say action or inaction by a ski area operator that unreasonably increases the inherent risk of skiing, you're going to a jury on almost anything. I mean, when they groom the trails, did they unreasonably increase the inherent risk? When they put up black diamond trails instead of blue or green dot trails, did they unreasonably increase the inherent risk? So I would urge the body to defeat Division One, and let's move on to the larger bill and discuss that from a policy perspective. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Nethercott.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. To address the question of this concept of inherent risk, it's an ancient concept known in the law, typically called assumption of risk. The famous case in the United States happened around the turn of the century called Steeplechase, and it had to do with an amusement park where the ride was to get on this essentially moving beltway. It was called the Wobbler. And an individual got on there, and he fell and broke his knees, and he sued the amusement park because the challenge was to see if you could stay up, and it tried to knock you down. In that case, the state of New York decided that, no, you assumed that risk. You knew what you were doing when you got on there, that you could likely fall. And so we're not going to hold the amusement park liable for entering into a voluntary action when you took on that risk yourself. It's old. It goes back to England. And so we have moved that law forward in this state and all across this country in two fundamental ways. One is we've already codified inherent risk in the Wyoming Recreational Safety Use Act, which is very, very important here, which I think actually allows the ski resorts the most protection despite their best efforts with this bill. This actually limits their liability in a much greater way than the lengthy bill that you have in front of you. Inherent risk, as defined by 1.1.122, states, inherent risk with regard to any sport or recreational opportunity means those dangers or conditions which are characteristic of, intrinsic to, or an integral part of any sport or recreational opportunity. That is very broad and provides immense protection. It has been a very successful tool in defending against frivolous lawsuits or those lawsuits that are inherently related to the activity involved or the sporting event. So this is already found in law. The language of the amendment says, if you unreasonably increase that risk, so therefore it's no longer intrinsic, you're going to be liable. So it's logical. It's absolutely logical. If you increase the inherent risks, you should be found liable for that. That's what that amendment states. And yes, the fact is, if somebody gets injured on a ski resort, regardless of what law is in place, there's a strong likelihood of a suit if they're severely injured. It's just the way it is. And I appreciate the effort to avoid being sued, but neither of the bills in front of the body are going to prevent that from happening, period. The question is, who is at fault? Then there's this other piece of protection, as I mentioned, the inherent risks, the assumption of risk. And then second, in Wyoming, we have what's called comparative fault. Very, very important concept under the law, where we compare the fault of all the parties involved and determine percentage-wise who is responsible. So if the skier failed to ski responsibly, a jury can determine or a judge can determine what percentage of fault they should have be attributed to them, and then the ski resort is also may share in some of that blame, and then whatever other factor that may be responsible as well. So there's significant protections under the law currently without the need for this bill. But the amendment that's provided that we're talking about, I want to be very clear what it says, unreasonably increases the inherent risks. So we're not obviating the protection of the inherent risks, but we're saying it to a ski resort. If you increase it, you're going to be liable for that. If you make it more dangerous than how it naturally is, you're going to be liable.
Senator Kinski.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. On and against Division One. This division says that an operators liable for any action or inaction that unreasonably increases the inherent risk of skiing. Folks, the very creation of a ski area increases the inherent risks of skiing. It started out in Norway or Sweden. They'd take wooden slats, and you would use your skins to go up a hill, and then you'd go down a hill. And now we're grooming the trails. We're putting up towers. We're taking them all across mountains. It increases the speed. What do you do inside a ski area that does not increase the inherent risk of this activity of strapping boards onto your feet and going down a hill at high speeds? This amendment essentially guts the bill because the rest of the bill defines the inherent risks, but then this says anything an operator does that increases those, name one thing that doesn't. This is just on and against the First Division. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We are on the... Senator Hastert.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And listening and reading and reading this and rereading this, and I think that the good colleague over here from behind me here has answered some of this question. And if you read that, it says the amendment shall not include action or inaction by a ski operator that unreasonably increases. And I just ask myself, and I think I've got some of the answers. Why should we allow ski areas to act or fail to act if that action or failure unreasonably increases inherent risk? I think that's a good amendment, a good point there. You know, and you talk about, we had some discussion about, a lot of these ski areas are mom and pop, and there's some small ski areas, and I skied in quite a few of them. And I, reading the newspapers and over the years, I haven't read where we've had a lot of these mom and pop places, ski areas that have been sued. I look at it as, what about the everyday mom and pop that are skiing down those hills? And the kids that they're going home to. So I think the ski areas accept inherent risk, and the skiers accept that inherent risk. And they should not have to accept ski area operators unreasonably increasing dangers prevented by inherent risk. So on and for the amendment.
We are... Senator Landon.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I have to confess I'm quite a bit like my friend from Sheridan. I'm swimming in all of this snow to try to figure out how we got to here. And my curiosity is how this bill arrived all the way to this point, and we end up with a standing committee amendment of this magnitude that I hearken back to the conversation that that our friend from Casper initiated in the first place. We went all the way through an interim and ended up with a pretty substantial bill, and then this seemed to come in late. I guess I'd be curious as to whether or not anything like this was suggested during the interim, anything came about that prompted this conversation that we're having today. It just feels like this arrived fairly late in the game, and I'm struggling a little bit with that. We had a committee look at this and try to come to some agreements. It sounds like they thought they had agreements in the fall, and then we end up here. But so any clarification there would help me.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you. A couple of points of information that I'd like to know is that the standard and reasonably, does that have I guess the standard that they knowingly caused this, knowing that they would increase the inherent risk unreasonably, or I'd like to find out whether that knowingly standard is in there. And then I guess along these lines is most of the time, if we don't have the cases, I think, in Wyoming, that there's probably plenty of ski area cases out there that could give the court some guidance as to what inherent risk actually is when it comes to
situations that may occur in Wyoming. And so I want to have a little discussion about whether or not courts can rely for some direction from out-of-state cases, whether that direction actually exists, and the question about whether they knew they were increasing it unreasonably, or whether it's just something they did. The thing that I would look at is like, okay, but let's say somebody wants to put in helicopter skiing, which to me, yeah, that's probably going to be a lot more riskier than a groomed trail. But is that unreasonable, and who makes that decision? So something in the precedents and some definition or some anecdotal evidence of what would be considered an unreasonable risk.
Senator Kinski.
Mr. Chairman, in response to my friend from LaGrange's question, I would suggest that we defeat Amendment 1, and then we will get on to what the courts have asked for. The courts in Wyoming have asked for the very list that we have in this bill, absent Division 1. The courts have noted that the states around us all have a list of what they deem to be inherent risks, and those are exactly what's provided in the bill. What you see in this risk of lists is what other states around us have. So, for instance, here's a case where the court said many of our surrounding states' inherent risk statutes provide lists of risks which the legislature have determined are inherent to certain activities. In Wyoming, the legislature did not provide the courts with that kind of guidance. We recognize that some trials could be avoided. And litigation costs could be reduced if the courts were able to decide as a matter of law whether a particular risk is inherent to a sport or recreational opportunity. So what it's about is, and my friend the lawyer from Cheyenne said, you're getting sued no matter what. That's true. You're getting sued. Somebody gets hurt, you're getting sued. The question is, do you have to wait for 2 years to go through a trial, or very early on can you go to the judge and say, Judge, I move for summary judgment. Dismiss this. They ran into a tower. It had padding on it. That's listed in Wyoming statutes as one of the inherent risks. Currently, the judge says, you know, there's no list in Wyoming. I guess we're always going to a jury in Wyoming, no matter that we've got a Recreational Safety Act. So this is answering the question the courts are asking. Please give us a list, and we can dispose of this litigation early on. What we do with Division One is we gut all that by sticking the whole concept of reasonable and unreasonable right back into the middle of the list of risks. So now you go to the judge, and you say, Judge, can we dismiss this? And the plaintiffs have a lawyer who says, well, Judge, it's kind of a jury question as to what's reasonable or unreasonable. And the judge goes, you're right, we're going to trial. So I would urge that we defeat Division One so that we can protect the 10 ski areas that we've got from this kind of litigation. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and for Division One, and to address some of the questions I had, they were similar to, or I heard they were similar to a question I had from the good senator from Natrona County about this going all the way through the process, and then we have a significant standing committee amendment after an interim study. And Mr. Chairman, I was surprised by the same thing because it got all the way to our committee in the second chamber, and when we were hearing the testimony, there was no agreement. One side, those that represented the ski areas, were ecstatic about this piece of legislation, and I would be too if I owned a ski area, because it basically eliminates any possibility of anything other than a summary judgment. It's an exhaustive list of everything that can happen to you in a ski area, and it says that all of those things are inherent risks. Well, that's a great bill if you own a ski area. And then on the other side, we had testimony from those that were advocating for the skiers, and it turns out that they thought this was a perfectly awful bill. And I never got a sense that there was ever a point of our cliche of the session, a kumbaya moment, at any point during the interim. That's not what I heard. I heard that it was constant tension and that this bill basically just moved through the process as it was. So, Mr. Chairman, I was wholly uncomfortable with the bill as it arrived. I thought it was a one-sided, unbalanced piece of legislation that made it clear that unless you had a watertight, gross negligence case that you were bringing against a ski area, there was no point in having a trial. And my concern, Mr. Chairman, is this is basically just trying to deny access to courts for plaintiffs that have reasonable cases. And that's what this first division is about, that reasonability aspect. If you are a ski area, an operator, and you unreasonably increase the risk, then you should be liable based on that increase. Now, as an example of that, that wouldn't be inherent to a ski area, if I'm dragging a log halfway across a groomed area and I decide I'm going to break for lunch, I would say that's an unreasonable increase in the risk that's caused by the operator of the ski area that was not an inherent risk to the area, but it certainly would be defined as an inherent risk because that's a log and a ski area and I'm on skis. This is a reasonable concept that we have in the first division. The idea that unreasonably increasing the risk is something that would lead to a denial of that being an inherent risk. Courts can look at that, and they can still look at that for summary judgment. If somebody's just skiing down a hill and hits a tree, as you do, as most of us probably have at some point, hopefully not bad, but we've all done something, and you go to a judge and you say, look, I hit a tree, I was skiing, and they say, is that all you've got? All right, well, according to this act, that's not qualifying because that's an inherent risk, summary judgment rule against you. That's perfectly reasonable. But again, you go to the log that was left in the middle of the ski run, you probably want that to be maintained as a problem that is not considered an inherent risk of the ski area. So we're not giving the courts enough credit. The courts are an important branch of our government. The fact that something goes to trial and has to have a jury is not a flaw of our system. That is not something to be avoided. It is true. We like some clarity. We like some guidance. But if in the end we need to have a jury make a decision, that's the process of our legal system. And I don't see that we've seen any flaws yet. Providing a little further guidance, Mr. Chairman, is perfectly reasonable. But I think that we're providing further clarity and a very reasonable standard with Division Number 1. I would encourage the body to adopt it.
Senator Bebout.
Yeah. Excuse me. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and against this Division Number 1. And I would listen to my colleague from the Ivory Tower. He either used the word reasonable or unreasonable 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 times in his comments. And you get into this bill and what it's trying to do and all of the doom and gloom I hear. If I go back to when we originally had the inherent risk in the Recreation Act, I heard these same arguments back then, 15, 20 years ago. They didn't want to pass the bill then. It was a good bill. We defined inherent risk. It worked. I don't know how many of you have been in trials, but just the fact that you think you need to go to jury trial, everything defeats the whole purpose of our court system. Summary judgment is a tool that should be used and utilized instead of having a broad open door when you put a word like unreasonable in here that just allows everything to go past summary judgment and go to trial jury. This is not the way to do it, members of the Senate. We need to defeat this amendment. And if you're thinking about it, what happens if you're up there skiing and you go up to a very, very difficult area and they put the black diamonds on there because it's a scary area and you shouldn't be going down there, but someone comes up there and doesn't understand it. So is that an unreasonable risk that they ski down that very difficult area and get hurt? If you read this that way, you could say, sure it is. So then instead of having a summary judgment motion, when we actually define what inherent risk is, you go to jury trial. 2 years later, what you probably do is you try to settle it. If this is a bad amendment, it guts the bill, I would ask you to defeat it.
Senator Christensen.
Mr. Chairman, a question for the sponsor. It's my understanding that the state directly south of us that's heavily involved in the industry, one of the top in the nation, rejected this type of language, but that there is a state to the extreme far east that has adopted this kind of language, and I'm wondering about that, who we're following.
Senator Nethercott.
Mr. Chairman, on and for the amendment. skiing in Wyoming is as old as the state is itself, right? So the tourism industry has been alive and well in Teton County for the inception of time, and the rest of the state as well. And clearly, mom and pops are able to survive, and they continue to grow, and they continue to operate, and they have done so without this law. Amazingly enough, they have not been bankrupted by these incredible litigation and these trial lawyers who are just attacking these ski resorts, even though we all know good and well that every time someone gets on those slopes, they get injured, and sometimes pretty severely. There are broken bones, dislocated shoulders, stitches. We've all seen it. We've all been there if you're a skier. And somehow, some way, these ski resorts continue to operate successfully in this state. On and for the amendment, I urge you to use your common sense here and remember that if a ski resort acts unreasonably, they should be held responsible just like the rest of us.
We're on Division 1 of Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 32. All those in, pardon? No. All those in favor of Division 1, the Standing Committee Amendment to House Bill 32, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
That division has been defeated. We are back on the bill. Division has been called. All those in favor of Division 1, Senate Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 32, please stand. Ten. Those opposed, please stand. As I aforementioned, that has been defeated. We are back on the bill. Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, again, my inquisitive nature and I guess my ignorance, too. If I could also get an explanation from somebody as to what the consequences are of, on page 11, lines 11 through 13, removing skiing from a sport or recreational opportunity. What's the consequences of doing that?
Senator Kinski.
Mr. Chairman, to address my colleague's question, currently, Wyoming has on the books the Recreational Safety Act, which is Section 1-1-121, 122, and 123. This bill creates a new act called the Ski Safety Act, which creates new sections 121, 22, 23, 24. So the old Recreational Safety Act, which has proven inadequate in the context of skiing, would no longer apply. And so 1-123 on page 11, assumption of risk, this act shall, on line 17, 18, this act shall not apply to skiing in a ski area as defined by the Ski Safety Act, is saying the old Recreational Safety Act does not apply to ski areas. Instead, the new section, the Ski Safety Act, would apply to ski areas as defined. I hope that clarifies it somewhat. What the ski areas are asking for here and is nothing new. We tried to protect them against the inherent lawsuits from the inherent risks of skiing with the Recreational Safety Act. The court said, you know, it's not specific enough. Make it more specific. So we're simply not giving them new rights, but clarifying what this legislature thought they had done years ago. As to the ski areas, yes, there are some that are big. There's seven that are very small. There's one near me on Highway 16, and there's one near me on Highway 14 in the Bighorns. It's very much like the small ski areas that many of us grew up skiing in. Let's take the one on Highway 16. You could have skied there last season for $18. Eight of that represented their insurance policy. Eight out of $18 to an insurance policy. They used to offer ski lessons. They had a situation where a dad signed his daughter up for ski lessons, and the dad decided to go along, and so while the instructor's trying to instruct the daughter, the dad's trying to instruct the daughter lost control, ran into a tree. They got a demand letter from the lawyer, turned it over to their insurance company. The insurance company said, you know, from now on, you're going to have to use certified instructors. This is a little area where mom and pop, literally mom and pop, rescued this ski area from bankruptcy. They're not getting rich doing this thing. It's a nice recreational opportunity for the area. To get certification on instructors, they've got to send people down to Colorado and pay them more than they can afford. The net result of the threat of lawsuits is they don't offer ski lessons anymore. There you are. The other one on Highway 14 went bankrupt several years ago. I and a number of community volunteers are raising money to try and reopen it. We partially reopened it. The lifts don't run. But you can clamber up the hill and ski down if you so choose. Our insurance policy is $11,000 a year for a non-operational ski resort. That is what the threat of litigation has done to us. Of the 10 ski areas, 7 are just like that, small. And they are operating on the knife edge, and they are one jury trial away from closing. Let's do what we thought this legislative body had done when it passed the Recreational Safety Act. Let's do what the courts are asking for and pass a specific list of the inherent risks of skiing. I would urge an aye vote on House Bill 32 as amended. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Are you ready for the question?
Mr. Chairman, yeah.
Senator Burns.
I have one more question, again, out of ignorance. On page 10, the statute of limitation, there's a 2-year limit on that. Is that common as far as statute of limitation goes for other activities?
Senator Anselmi.
Chairman, thank you. To answer the good senator's question, actually the tort-based statute of limitation is generally 4 years.
Senator Meyer.
I've got a question I want to see if I can have answered here. On page 10, we've got subsection B on line 4. It says, actions based upon negligence of a person or ski area operator wherein the damage, injury, or death is not the result of an inherent risk shall be preserved pursuant to this statute, WS-11109. And then I look over on page 3, section G, collisions with other skiers or ski area vehicles. And then the situation I want to have a question on as far as whether or not if a death occurs or injury, whether it's actionable, is the question that was posed by the senator from the ivory tower, where somebody leaves a grooming tool or implement parked and goes off for lunch, and it's an obvious non-padded hazard. And somebody's skiing down there, he sees that, and he makes an abrupt move and runs into a 10-year-old child and kills her. Does the parents of the 10-year-old child have an actionable cause?
Senator Nethercott.
Mr. Chairman, I think that's up for a jury to decide.
Senator Hastert.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, there's always a lack of clarity in the legal realms. You know, that every case is unique, and fact and circumstances matter, and it's unfair to dispose of valid litigation. And I think we got a Seventh Amendment that says we have a right to a jury trial. You know, and it's my understanding from what I've heard of the interim is that the judge that asked for clarity didn't suggest that nearly everything that can possibly happen on a ski area or a ski hill be defined as inherent risk. You know, this is a new statute that only protects the ski industry, and you'll be given, there, in my opinion, we're giving them much greater rights on this than, you know, it kind of reminds me, years ago we had a special session, we had a super committee put together, and we had a lot of testimony, and there were some issues about, the insurance coverage, and in a discussion I was having with the insurance companies over the medical industry and asking them if we passed this certain type of reform, would they in fact then reduce the rates to the doctors? And they said, no, we're not going to do that, but we might decrease the rate of increase. And, you know, we have insurance issues in this state as part of this problem, but to deny folks an adequate and fair opportunity, and to think that we're going to keep them from having a jury trial when we have a Seventh Amendment that allows that. I just think this is a bad way to go. We're kind of allowing one industry to kind of cherry pick here, and I'm just on and against the bill.
Question has been called. All those in favor of Senator Von Platern's motion that when the committee of the whole rise to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 32, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
The chair is in doubt. All of those in favor, please stand. Those opposed, please stand. Thank you. House Bill 32 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that the Committee of the Whole beg leave to rise and sit again.
You've heard the motion. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Carried. Motion carried.
Good job.
Standing committee reports. Just seconds. Senator Moniz.
Thank you, Mr. President. Privilege of the floor?
You may.
Thank you. Members of the Senate, if you could, I believe they're still here, back there. Half of the members of the Leadership Laramie, of the Laramie Chamber of Business Alliance, are here to watch us today. Could you give them a hand?
Welcome to the Senate. It's great to see you today. Standing committee reports.
February 14, 2017. Mr. President, your committee number 7, to whom was referred House Bill 44, engrossed, Board of Professional Engineers and Land Surveyors, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Case, Nethercott, Pappas, and Scott. Excused, Senator Agar. Senator Case, Chairman. Mr. President, your committee number 7, to whom was referred House Bill 28, approved depositories for public funds, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Case, Nethercott, Pappas, and Scott. Excused, Senator Agar. Senator Case, Chairman. Mr. President, your committee number 8, to whom was referred House Bill 275, engrossed, driver's licenses revisions, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Anderson, Baldwin, Christensen, and Meyer. Excused, Senator Agar. Senator Meyer, Chairman.
We're at that order of business, signing of Senate Enrolled Acts. Senate Enrolled Act number 6. Reading clerk, please read it.
Senate Enrolled Act Number 6, being original Senate File 11, an act relating to license revocations.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act Number 6, being original Senate File Number 11. I so sign Senate Enrolled Act Number 7.
Senate Enrolled Act Number 7, being original Senate File 5, an act relating to banks, banking, and finance.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act Number 7, being original Senate File Number 5. I have so signed Senate Enrolled Act Number 8.
Senate Enrolled Act Number 8, being original Senate File 9, an act relating to the State Board of Equalization.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act Number 8, being original Senate File Number 9. I have so signed Senate Enrolled Act Number 9.
Senate Enrolled Act Number 9, being original Senate File 10, an act relating to county boards of equalization.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act Number 9, being original Senate File Number 10. I have so signed. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, I believe that clears the desk.
Mr. President, I move that the Senate stand in recess until 2 p.m. this afternoon.
Announcement, Senator Scott.
Mr. President, I've been asked to announce that the Wyoming Community Service Providers are providing a lunch for the legislature in the multipurpose room in the center of the building.
Senator Burns.
Mr. President, your committee number 2 appropriations will meet at about 20 after 12 in the JAC room, where they will take up House Bill 58, School Facilities Appropriations. In addition, we will be meeting upon adjournment today to review House amendments, and in addition to that, we will be meeting upon noon recess tomorrow to take up House Bill 39, Engrossed, Witchy Repayment Program, Veterinary Medicine Students, and re-referred House Bill 40, Education Accountability.
Senator Hicks.
Mr. President, your committee number 5, Agricultural, Public Lands, and Water, will be meeting 15 minutes upon adjournment today in room S27 to take up House Bill 47, Water Rights Procedures, House Bill 26, Engrossed, Bark Beetle Funding Program, House Bill 271, Engrossed, Game Bird Farms, Greater Sage Grouse.
Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your committee number 9, Minerals and Economic Development, will meet about 15 to 20 minutes after noon recess tomorrow to discuss among our Senate colleagues the interim topics. We have no bills lined up.
And we can figure that one out.
No, please.
Senator Christensen.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your Judiciary Committee number 1 will meet Wednesday, February 15th, 8 a.m., Jonah Room, L54. To consider the following bills: House Bill 136, Engrossed, Campus Carry; House Bill 137, Engrossed, Wyoming Repeal Gun-Free Zones Act; and House Bill 155, Parental Rights.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your committee number 3, Revenue, will meet at 12:30. Grab a quick bite, Revenue Committee members. 12:30 in Jonah Room L54 to take up House Joint Resolution 2, Balanced Budget Amendment Resolution, House Bill 50, Limitations on Delegates, Constitution Amendment Conventions, and House Joint Resolution 3, Single Subject Amendment.
I cut you off. Go ahead.
No, that's it. Thank you.
Senator Case.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. Mr. President, your committee number 7, Corporations. We'll continue our discussions from the morning. We've got one bill left, House Bill 165, Engrossed Acupuncture Practice Act. We're going to move back to the regular room of S18, and we will take up at 12:30, Mr. President. Thank you very much.
Yeah, and one other thing, too, for the committee chairman, if you have a lot of bills and we see other committees that have a light load and you want to visit with that particular committee chairman to shift some bills around, please feel free to either discuss it with me or the majority floor leader. You've all heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The Senate will stand in recess until 2 p.m.